brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys.
Get ready to learn everything you ever wanted to know and a whole lot that you didn't. It's time for a Chats episode.
Scream for me, everyone in podcast land! Sorry. I had to do that, and you'll understand why in just a moment. Welcome, everyone, to another Suds segment, where good beer meets bad radio. I'm one of your hosts, good old gal Juliana, and joining me at the table today is good old boy Drew.
Oh, wait, it's me? Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi.
It's good to be back.
It is good to have you back. Good old boy Dave.
I thought we weren't going to have him back.
I think he snuck in the back door. You forgot to lock it.
All right, there you go.
Baby got back.
Oh, great.
Beast with two backs.
Hey. This is not...
Okay, that's a little early.
Sorry.
Okay. And once it's again.
Okay. I know you're excited. We're all excited. And especially excited because we're doing a very special chat episode. Yes, the Suds people can do chats episodes.
We'll find out.
Okay, fair. Joining us at the table today is president and co-founder of the Black Abbey Brewing Company in Nashville, Tennessee. We have Carl Meyer.
Hey, it's me. I'm here.
All right.
Cool. Well, everyone who's listened to the show or followed us on social media has heard us wax poetic about our love for the Black Abbey Brewing Company and their amazing beers. But there is something even more profound about this man. Something that makes him my kindred brother. His love of Iron Maiden.
Up the irons.
I left alone. My mind was blank. I needed time to think to get the memories from my mind.
This makes me want to throw the table through the window.
I know, right? The rage is building.
If you're going to throw something, throw Drew.
I'm heavier than I look.
Dense. He's very dense.
Very dense, yes.
Okay.
Hey. Okay, so for those of you who didn't instantly recognize them, and I'm questioning why you're listening to us, then
or
if you don't
living.
Recognize them or living, I'll let the band introduce themselves in their own words. From IronMaiden.com, Iron Maiden are an institution. Over the course of 46 years, how many bands get to say that number? They have come to embody a spirit of fearless, creative independence, ferocious dedication to their fans, and a cheerful indifference to their critics that's won them a following that spans every culture, generation, and time zone. A story of gritty determination and courageous defiance of the naysayers, theirs has been an adventure like no other.
While we love talking about music, this is, after all, a show about beer. In 2013, Iron Maiden frontman Bruce Dickinson partnered with Robinson's Brewery in Cheshire, England, to create a premium bitter fittingly called Trooper. And since then, Iron Maiden has expanded the lineup to over a dozen beers brewed by multiple breweries around the world. We have four of those beers today. Good old boy Drew, would you give us today's lineup?
The Iron Maiden beers we'll be tasting today are from Robinson's Brewery, the Trooper Premium Bitter, the Red and the Black Porter.
Oh, that was Bruce Dickinson into Foghorn Leghorn
a little bit. Southern Pasture.
The Fear of the Dark English Stout.
Then from Brewdog USA, we have the Hellcat India Pale Lager. And if time permits, we may have a bonus beer.
Thanks.
Secret
Drew.
Bonus
that was
beers.
Perfect. Perfect. Good old boy Dave, why don't you give us the suds ratings for today?
We'll be discussing and rating these beers with these suds ratings plus our signature belching sounds. Here are those ratings now. 1, that sucks. Give me anything but a bud. 2, was that a belch?
It was totally not a belch.
3, ah, oh, what a relief. 4, a body should really not make that sound. And 5, listen to that hang time, give me another.
Carl's okay. Giving us a look.
Boy, that's a...
That was disgusting. That would, I feel judged.
That was perfect.
That'll clear a room.
Yes, it will. Okay, we're going to be playing clips from several Iron Maiden songs so we can discuss them. But while you're listening, you should fire up some vinyl or log on to your favorite streaming service.
Vinyl.
Pop open some Iron Maiden beers, or better yet, pop open some Black Abbey beer and play along with us. Now, let's get into our first beer and get things going. And of course, we have to start at the beginning with the Trooper.
You'll take my life, but I'll take yours too. You fire a musket, but I'll run you through. So when you're waiting for the next attack, you better stand, there's no turning back. The bill was sound, the charge begins. But on this battlefield, no one wins. The smell of my free smoke and horses'
breath. The galloping guitars. Anyways, gives me chills. Okay. The Trooper, named after this track from the 83 album Peace of Mind, is a 4.7% premium British bitter that combines Bobick, Golding, and Cascade hops. A quick note on Robinson's Brewery. They're a family-run regional brewery in Stockport, Cheshire, England, that was founded in 1849. That was originally the Unicorn Inn. They currently own about 260 pubs, mostly across northern England. And I thought it was like a good pairing for Bruce to pick Robinson's. All right. What are your initial thoughts on the beers, guys?
260 pubs. You know who can't do that? Anybody in the United States.
Very true.
That's called a tied house. Which is fascinating, right? Like that was prohibited in Prohibition. It's the nature of the three-tier system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So it's like if you go to Taco Bell, you know what you're not getting at Taco Bell? Coke, right?
Yeah.
You can only get Pepsi.
Yeah.
That's right. A tied house.
Ah,
that's illegal in the alcoholic beverage industry in the United States.
Ah.
So I thought that was really interesting to read that doing my show prep. Like, wow, this brewery owns 260 pubs. That's more than Tailgate.
But that's the thing that...
You know what? Yeah, there you go.
Too soon? Was it too?
No, that was no, right
perfect.
On time.
Right, buddy. Right on time. Right on time, yeah. But that's the thing, though, in England, right, is that they're all...
Samuel,
the Green King and Young's and
Fuller's, Samuel Smith's, everybody. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. All over Europe, you roll into a
it
pub
seems to work,
and you order a bitter
for them.
You don't necessarily say, oh, well, I would like a Trooper or I'd like a Fuller's. If you're in a Fuller's bar, you're going to get Fuller's.
Right.
Which is fascinating. I think do you want me to just chime in on what I think about the beer?
Yeah,
please do.
Yeah.
It's funny. I went and got my haircut this morning with my son, and we were listening to Iron Maiden in the car on the way there as part of my week long deep dive, and we were listening to Out of the Silent Planet, or like it's sort of the post return three guitar attack records, and I said, Iron Maiden is unapologetically who they are. These records are influenced by the time, but they're not defined by it. And I think that is how I would describe this beer, right? It's influenced by the time. Like you wouldn't put Cascade hops in an ESB. That doesn't seem to make sense.
Right.
That's very much in a sort of a West Coast American hop varietal.
I'm just glad it's not Mosaic.
You son of a...
I'm just glad it's not Fuggle. We're like, Fuggle hops taste and smell like feet. Not that I know what feet taste like, but I do know what they smell like.
Hey, buddy. This is a judgment-free zone, buddy.
This is totally judgment-free.
Yeah.
But it's like Trooper is a working man's beer, right? And that is a we just actually rolled a beer out at Black Abbey called Pub Ale.
Yeah.
And Pub Ale is just what it is, just what it sounds like. It is a beer that you would find in an English pub, and Trooper fits that model.
Definitely in the session beer, you know, because that's the British model too, is a session drinking session, you know, 4.7%. You can put down quite a few of these. It's very even keeled to me, you know, not too much of the malt, not too much of the hops. It's pretty well balanced.
Yeah.
I agree with it being well balanced. I would say that it's a good representation of the style, but calling out that the hops are not exactly representative of what you might see in a pub in England.
Sure, sure, sure.
It is, however, I think a good update to a classic, which is also how I feel about, you know, some of Iron Maiden's newer stuff.
Nice. Okay. He's testing out the
waters. That's fair.
If that
was
controversial. Yeah.
No. No. Okay. No, that's fine.
Do you mean slow and bloating and
wow. Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Wow. Have we gotten to that part of the show yet?
We've got about two more beers.
I'm talking about what I do and don't like about Iron Maiden. Yeah.
Now you'll figure out the belching.
And yeah, like to sum up what everyone's saying, I mean, this is classic Maiden to me. I was really impressed when it first came out because I've always viewed Maiden as being a blue collar band, you know, and I've come from a very blue collar town. I will run blue in that regard for my entire life. And I totally relate to this because growing up, we had friends' houses that had a pub. Like the ground floor would be their pubs or gin mills, and they would always serve something like this. Not that I would know anything about that being underage, but this just relates to all of that to me, and just makes me feel at home.
What do you want to do for this? You
know. So we'll return with more about the Trooper in just a minute.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising, glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing, we've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Welcome back, everyone. Today is a chat episode. This is our premiere chats episode.
Probably one and done.
Oh, whatever. Well, I mean, where can we go after this, though? Honestly,
it's downhill from here.
So, the founder of the Black Abbey Brewery in Nashville, Tennessee, is here with us today, Carl. And Carl is not only a great brewer, but he is my brother in the sense that our love for Iron Maiden is very strong and very deep. What we were talking about right before the break was the Trooper beer, which was our first foray into
premium bitter.
Yep. Premium bitter.
Robinson's Brewery.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
And we are going to rate that quickly, and we're going to rate it a 3. So, Carl.
Yes.
What was the first beer that you remember enjoying?
Well, it's
without incriminating yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first beer that I remember drinking was Milwaukee's Best.
Okay.
The
Beast.
And for a long time, I think that's what we probably all have a similar beer experience, that's what we just thought beer was.
Sure.
Right?
Beer. Yeah.
And because you were drinking beer not as something to enjoy, but rather a means to an end.
Yep. Right?
It was like, we need to get drunk. So we're going to drink this stuff. It doesn't really matter what it tastes like. And when I was in college, the college I went to had a big hotel school. And the hotel school had a course called Introduction to Wine and Spirits. Oh. And the seniors all took it. Didn't matter what sort of part of the college you were in, yeah, you would go take wines. And my birthday is in February, so I was older, so I took the course in the spring of my junior year, whereas most everybody else took it in their senior year.
Yeah.
So, which was the smaller of the category, right? So they brought in better speakers, I would say, better guest lecturers.
Okay.
And nice. Like Robert Mondavi came and spoke.
Oh.
like they were serious. It was serious.
Yeah, sure.
And so they did a whole class on beer. And Michael Jackson came. And,
wow.
Like, and wow. For those of you who don't know, like, wow, I'm talking about the world premier beer critic.
Not a...
Yeah.
Not Billy Jean's. Not his. Yeah.
But so Michael Jackson came, and I remember, like, I kept my notes from that lecture. And we tried Celis White. We tried Sam Smith's Taddy Porter.
Oh, man.
We tried Brooklyn Brown and Brooklyn Lager. And then there was one other one that I can't remember. But I remember, so there was a bar in the we had a little hotel on campus, which is where that lecture took place, was in the auditorium of the hotel. And so we'd go into the hotel bar and we'd get pitchers of Killian's for $5, which should date me a little bit.
Yeah.
But I remember sitting in there drinking Killian's being like, what is this? What is this? This is no longer acceptable for me. Right. After, so Sam Smith's Taddy Porter was really the first
beer game changer, man,
that just rattled my cage.
Yeah.
And,
oh, that's cool.
And I think a lot of people have that experience where they go from domestic lager to Euro something, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's St. Pauli Girl or Heineken or sort of that Euro lager, but then it moves into the ambers and the porters and the stouts.
And you can't really go back.
Yes. You know, and then then you get into hopping your face off.
Yeah.
And then I think eventually you kind of swing back into whatever your favorite category is. But that was for me, Taddy Porter. Mm.
That's a good one. Yeah. Samuel Smith, they have some, their chocolate, that organic chocolate stout is probably one of the best stouts I've ever had.
Yeah. We put it on tap in our tap room as a guest tap not long ago.
Yeah.
The distributor brought in, I don't know, 6 or 8 kegs of it. And it's not the distributor we use, but I'm on the mailing list. And I just immediately messaged in. I was like, I'm going to need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how do you, classic. And, you know, another brewery that's been around forever. So was it the porter that prompted you to start brewing?
I would say probably, yes, eventually. I think that's really what we understood was we now have, we're now interested in flavors that are too expensive for us to be buying all the time.
Yeah.
As, you know, end of college career to, like, getting your first job and trying to figure out how to manage your money and all that stuff. And that was when we started homebrewing. It was me and a couple of buddies from college bought each other homebrew kits for Christmas, bought Charlie Papazian's
The Complete Joy of Homebrewing. Dude, that is such a great book.
And we just started trying to make beer for ourselves.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, whether you collect vinyl or you're into whiskey, like, you get into these hobbies that suddenly become way more expensive than something you should be referring to as a hobby. And at some point in that, it was probably in kind of the early 2000s, my wife was like, this is no longer a hobby. Like, this either needs to be a career or we need to kind of pare this thing back.
Yeah.
And it was about that time in 2008, we won a silver medal in the national homebrew competition. It was in Oakland that year for a barrel-aged Belgian quad. Don't mind me as I belch off mic.
Oh.
And that was when we medaled at a national level, we thought, all right, maybe we ought to write a business plan. Like, maybe this has got something. And so it was me and two partners, and we sat down and started on Thursday. We all had, you know, regular jobs, quote unquote. And so we started working on business plans, homebrewing a lot, trying to come up with, you know, what the idea was going to be, not just, all right, well, we're just going to brew beer and try to sell it to people. We wanted to very much have this sort of thematic approach to what we wanted to do. And what we found was that we were mostly drinking and brewing European style stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, I do think that Taddy Porter really helped kind of drive who we were looking at. But we also were in a, you know, 2008, 2009 kind of run through there. In that timeline, most of the breweries, especially in Nashville, had this sort of 50s retro US feel. Like if you look at Mayday and Yazoo and Fat Bottom and the breweries that were active at that time, they very much had this kind of 50s vibe. But there was a gap, I think, in both the beer being produced in Nashville is and nationally, honestly, that had sort of a European influence. So we very much wanted to be in that world. And what more typifies a European influenced brewery than this sort of monastery type feel, right?
The, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Like some of the greatest, generally thought of as the greatest beers in the world are brewed at Belgian breweries, monastery breweries. And so we never really wanted to be a Belgian brewery. That wasn't ever our thought process, although our flagship brand runs on Belgian yeast. So we get, this sounds crass, but we get hung with that a lot. Like, I don't think that's necessarily true of who we are, but that is, it is a part of who we are because we run our flagship beer is called the Rose and it is a Belgian blonde and it runs on Belgian yeast and it has all those Belgian characteristics. But the majority of what we do is more specifically European driven. So like I was saying about pub ale, do we do IPAs? Yes, we do IPAs. You have to do one. If you want to be a brewery in the United States today, True. You got to have it. But we really try to focus on European stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Now, what do you think about the Trooper, the song, the character?
All right. So
the whole thing.
All right. I'm a marching band guy. So I grew up playing trumpet. I was always in, you know, Allstate, symphonic band, all that stuff. But
marching French horn.
Yes. You look like a trumpeter.
Yes. Yes. Predominantly. I mean, you can tell. Like, you can pick people out based on their instrument. Like, Drew, you're probably more of a trombone guy. Nailed it.
Only played it for 2 years.
Yeah. So I think that the Trooper, I've always said, man, what a marching track that'd be. Right? That'd be just, it would be great. My first experience with Iron Maiden, I was an early teen and up the road, somebody we went to church with lived up the road, owned a house that an old farmhouse that had been converted into apartments, four apartments. And we lived very close to the Knowles Atomic Laboratory. So it was Navy guys. They were building nuclear engines for submarines. And so these, you know, of course they're in the Navy, so they're getting moved around all the time. So they had these apartments in this old farmhouse, but down in the basement, the farmhouse had a coal furnace and the coal furnace had been removed. But what had not been removed was the mountain of ashes. Mm. You imagine this? You live in a farmhouse where your house is heated by a coal furnace and you're just digging the ashes out and throwing them in the corner. What a great way to not have a house.
Yeah,
for real.
But anyway, that was a summer job. I had a summer job where I had 2 5-gallon pails and I would carry the ashes out of the basement of this house and dump them in the woods. And I did that all summer. And somebody gave me a copy of Live After Death on cassette. And I had a Walkman with the headphones with the little orange pads on them, you know? Yeah. And I listened. I had three. Live After Death, Triumph Stages, and Worldwide Live, Scorpions.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened to those records over and over and over and over again that summer while I was digging ashes out of the basement of this house. And that was my intro to Iron Maiden, was that Live After Death record. So nice. That Scream for Me, Long Beach. Also, I promised before show to give you this, and this is why. In 1984, on the World Slavery Tour, Iron Maiden stopped in Nashville. They played Municipal Auditorium in front of a crowd of 3,000 people. This was on the World Slavery Tour, where they sold out two nights at the Long Beach Arena in California, 20,000 people each night, and recorded a live record. We're the biggest band on the planet. And in Nashville,
3,000
people showed up. So
and that's
their management said, never again.
Yeah.
We're not going back. And they didn't come back to Nashville until 2013, which is the year that our brewery opened and the year they launched Trooper. And our distributor also distributes Trooper and brought us to the show trying to court us.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So I went to that show on Ajax Turner's dime.
Wow.
And promptly frightened them with exactly how into it I was.
Nice.
No, that was a great show, though. I didn't see it here. I saw it up north, but yeah, that was a great show.
It was the, you know, it was the greatest hits tour.
Yeah. I mean, like, how could you not? Yeah. How could you not?
Yes. They played Phantom of the Opera. It was great.
They played all the greats. And I started a little bit later in this scheme of things. Seventh Son of a Seventh Son was my first foray into them. And so I missed a lot of the beginning, but once I got caught up, it was, just amazing. All right, let's move on to beer number two. This is our Hellcat IPA, or IPL rather. 6% U.S. only release that was first brewed in collaboration with BrewDog in 2021, which I thought was really interesting. Since it's not named after an Iron Maiden song, we picked one that pairs well with it, the title track from their second studio album, Killers, that was released in 1981.
Singer's different.
I know. We'll get into that in a minute. Okay, let's talk about Hellcat. What are our thoughts? Do we have any thoughts?
What's your opinion of the IPL versus the cold IPA versus...
this is probably a whole show.
Yeah.
Honestly, like the history of IPA, where it started, where it is now, how it exists in predominantly America... is I think a whole separate topic, but like the A in IPA stands for ale. And so this, I'm hesitant to use that kind of terminology IPL because it's a hoppy lager. And I think it's fair to call something what it is. Right. I think you could call this a hoppy lager and people would understand what that means. So it feels like the marketing department somewhere came up with this concept of IPL.
Yep.
But
don't hate the player, hate the game.
I believe in love. But
help me, what have I done?
This glimmer of metal, this moment is ready to strike. I think as far as a trend goes, I mean, you hop forward beers on lager yeast. I mean, they taste good. I'm all right with things that taste good.
Clean finish, you know, usually.
I saw Maiden on Legacy of the Beast in Columbus. A friend of mine worked for BrewDog at the time and was able to get us the hookup at the BrewDog Hotel.
Oh, nice.
In Columbus. So it was my son's first show.
Oh, nice.
First concert ever. He and I went up there and stayed at the hotel and went to the show. So drank a couple of Hellcats in the hotel, which is attached to, I think it's their barreling facility. I don't think they're actually doing brewing packaging there. And it's interesting because I feel like this might have, this maybe got a couple of months on it. Then like, it's not quite as bright and sparkly hop forward as I remember. But I think overall as a beer, like I enjoy drinking this more than I enjoy drinking Trooper. Partially, I think it just fits my personal flavor preference.
Your taste profile a little better right now, sure.
But it's just, I don't know, it's bright and it's fresh and it's dank. Mm-hmm. So I
like it as a lawnmower beer.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, give me something hot outside, you know, cold beer, crisp finish, refreshing. 6% isn't going to kill you. You know, maybe not a... I'm a little bigger than some folks, so, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad. It's a modern, like, dare I say that it's more of a new album versus an old album. You know what I mean? Because
it's long and bloated.
Oh, boy.
Well, we're getting to that. But I just mean that it's not traditional classic Maiden. It's more of a... It's a modern take of Maiden, but I could see why they went with BrewDog, and I think that fits too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something, personally, I'm going to drink the Trooper more than I'm going to drink this, but that's just me. Dave, your thoughts?
I'm kind of with Carl. I typically go for more malt forward beers, but this is nice and bright and refreshing, and I think hopheads would like it. Even though it's not going to blow your mind, but I think it's a tasty, citrusy little beer.
Okay, cool. It's a four for me.
Yeah.
All right.
We're going to rate it a four for all of us.
Now, which singer do you like better?
Blaze Bailey. No, I'm kidding.
I think Juliana was about to come across the table.
Yeah. I was clenching.
So Blaze did his best.
Hey, you know, who can
follow Bruce?
The thing about those two Blaze records is, for me, it's more about the production than it is about his singing.
Yeah.
Like, the songwriting is the same, right? It's still Steve who's mostly doing the work. I don't know, they all sound kind of muddy to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love those Paul Di'Anno records, like the first two, and then Made in Japan. Mm-hmm. I just love them, but I love them for what they are. And I think when you go from listening to Killers to then stepping into Number of the Beast, it's almost like a totally separate band.
Yeah.
Right. It's just, so Dickinson's my guy. Like, I think, He's stood the test of time. I think that his body of work is much more complete. I think Paul Di'Anno is kind of one-dimensional in terms of what he's able to deliver behind the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I love those first two records.
Yeah, I was kind of like raised on Bruce, so when I hear the earlier records, I have a hard time. I know that's wrong. Because Killers is great, and those first couple records were great. But yeah, it's, for me, it's Bruce. And I think it's because I started seeing them live with Bruce, and that whole theatrics and everything that he encompasses, like, to me, is the big essence of Maiden. Mm-hmm. I mean, Steve Harris is as well, but you know what I mean?
I do.
Well, to be continued in just a minute.
It's not just the destination, but baby, the whole elation of riding down this lover's avenue. As slow as a willow blows, or as fast as the whirlwind grows, we glide beneath the stars in cobalt blue. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, we are doing a special episode. We are doing a chats episode, and that's what we're doing. We're chatting, and we're drinking beer. Some really interesting beer about an interesting band with an interesting guy, Carl Meyer,
oh,
who is the founder of the Black Abbey.
Thought you meant Drew.
Well,
I mean, he's pretty interesting.
He is.
It's kind of weird to look at, but...
Well, there's...
That's why we're on the radio, right?
Exactly. Okay. Next up, we're going to talk about another beer. This is the third in our lineup. It's a 6.8% English porter, first brewed in 2016. A blend of chocolate and crystal malt that gives a full-bodied beer a roasted malt and caramel backbone. The Robinson's yeast provides hints of both licorice and honey to create a delicious, warming brew. From Iron Maiden's 2015 album, Book of Souls, this is The Red and the Black.
We're pouring it.
We're pouring it.
We're pouring it right now.
And we're drinking it.
We didn't totally open the wrong bottle. It's fine.
Oh, I totally opened
it. We're letting it warm up.
I was like, this has got some age on it or something.
Oh, it does. That and it's my fault. I brought a bottle of Trooper with the limited edition Day of the Dead label on it.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like the label on Red and the Black. Yeah,
well, there's a guy with a, skeleton guy on there. Really. So
there is a skeleton guy on it. But yeah,
so anyways, as we're now drinking the Red and the Black, which that is a nice song for it being a newer.
It's not long and bloated.
Right. Well,
quit saying long and bloated.
Yeah, we're going to.
That's just weird. Like the visual.
You're freaking me out, man.
It's okay. I don't know. The last two. Book of Souls and Senjutsu have some tracks on them that could have realistically been shorter.
Yes.
That's as Forrest Gump would say. That's all I got to say about that. That's
okay. Right. Let's talk about a porter for a minute.
Okay. Now this one looks like a porter. Mm-hmm. It smells and tastes like a porter.
Yes, it does.
I think like we talked about with Trooper, Iron Maiden is a band for the working man, right? Like,
yeah.
They know exactly who they are and they deliver just the way you would expect, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is much the same. This tastes like an English porter, right?
Yeah.
It's not over the top roasty. It's not over the top malty. It's, you could drink 10 of them.
That's what I like about English beers in general is there's a lot more balance and control. American beers, a lot of times, go one way or the other. Like,
yes,
we're going to go all the hops.
Yeah.
Or we're going to go, all the sour. Whichever way we're going to go.
Or all the lactose or whatever. Yeah. Yes.
Talking about bloated.
Where do you stand, Carl, on like bottled versus cans? Like, I think cans tend to keep better in general, but.
Yeah, we only put beer in cans. And as a European-influenced brewery, when we were getting ready to open, we decided we were going to put beer in bottles. And I think that was from the very beginning, that was what we were going to do. And then when it came down to, okay, now it's time to start packaging beer. We had been open for 2 years. We realized that not only the mechanics and the expense of putting beer in the bottles were significantly more, but the cans really, there had been advancements in can technology, in how the actual cans contain beer and keep beer from being metallicized, if that's a word.
Yeah.
Just made that up.
Yeah.
I like it.
That we decided that cans were the way to go, and for a number of different reasons. The logistics and the money of it is you could fit more cans on a pallet. Cans are lighter than bottles. Yeah. All of the packaging that goes along with bottles, the mother carton, the six pack holders, the labels, the crowns, all that stuff.
It's
a lot of stuff. It's expensive.
Yeah. I just always like going into your brewery and seeing like walls of like cans.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And cans, there's no, your beer's not going to get light struck in a can.
That's true.
So yeah. I think it was cans for us.
So the reason I asked is because this is the first one we tried today that came in a bottle, and it's a brown bottle. So obviously brown is supposed to, protect.
It's a larger format.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Drew, what do you think about this English porter?
I mean, I enjoy it. It's very English.
Okay.
The first, craft beer that I enjoyed was a Newcastle brown ale. So, this very much reminds me of that. But, at 11 to, quote the world's loudest band, it's something that in a, what is that? A 500? No, seven. I don't know. In a 16.9. Gosh, I guess I've been drinking cans for too long. That looks almost like a bomber, but anyhow.
Well, it's not, but yeah.
It's something that I could conceivably finish off myself, but also share with someone else. And
yeah.
It's.
What do you think, JB?
I like it. It's very, it's English to me, and it's.
It's not tatty.
No.
But it's good.
No, but it's easy. It's very drinkable, and when I think of a good English bitter or a good English beer, it's something where I can have a few of them and I don't have to think about it. I can just enjoy and be done with it.
And I think, this is just the nerd, but I can taste the similarity in the water.
Oh.
You know, I think there's a consistency between Trooper and this beer that is likely attributable just to the water.
Well, you probably think a lot more about the water than a lot of people who drink. You just drink beer, you know.
So. Yeah, I mean, when people say, "Oh, you know, I tried beer from Founders, and all the Founders beers have a similar flavor characteristic." Mm-hmm. It must be their yeast. It's probably not. It's probably the water.
Yeah, sure.
That's how I feel about bread from New England.
Oh gosh.
Well, all right. It's true. It's a thing. Yeah, but it's a thing.
Yeah,
yep. I know.
Cool. Yeah. How do we want to go with this? Three?
Yeah, three. Yeah, all right. Three. Okay. Right. We're going to rate it to three.
All right.
Okay. What do you got for us, Dave?
Carl, when we were talking about doing this show, there were a few songs that you pointed out that you really wanted to talk about.
Yep.
And the first one is this one. The cussing lips on it. Now, that was Rime of the Ancient Mariner from 1984, I believe.
Yep.
Power Slave?
Yep.
All right. Written by Steve Harris. Tell us why you picked that one.
Can I ask real quick, what's the length of that song, Carl?
13 and a half minutes.
Shut up. Yeah. You know.
Didn't get a lot of radio play.
Nope.
Except from really cool radio stations.
It's that's my favorite Iron Maiden song on my favorite Iron Maiden record. That break, like coming out of the, like, you know, a full times 50 little, living men.
Yeah, there, like no the little acoustic.
Yeah, like, and yeah. Coming right back into that. You take this epic poem and translate it into a 1980s new wave of British metal song, and then piece it together in multiple song pieces, like multiple movements. Like if this was Pink Floyd's Shine On You Crazy Diamond, right? It's, you know, you got Shine On parts 1 through 6 and then 7 through 9 or whatever it is. There's multiple movements in the song. And I just, that pull out of the long bridge into that the curse that lives on in their eyes part is just absolutely incredible for me.
Yeah.
And having seen them perform it, I think twice live, they're so tight. Like the changes are incredibly tight.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know, blows my mind every time. And like, what other song can you think of where the first guitar solo is at like 7.5?
Right.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. 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 This song's already been going 7 minutes before there's even a solo. It's incredible.
This is one of the songs that really impresses me about Steve Harris. Like I think his bass playing, there are other songs that are more impressive of his bass playing than this song, but for his songwriting and the fact, like when you look at him, and this is like, you can't, you know, judge a book by its cover, but you don't, when you look at Steve Harris, you don't get history buff, you know, poetry aficionado. Like you don't see that in most, when you look at a metal bass player, you know, but this guy loves history. He loves the literature and all the things.
Oh, but they all do.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's like the big backbone of what makes Maiden, Maiden.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is they're the combination of like your best and your favorite historians with a bit of Python thrown in for good measure and a very blue collar work ethic where, I mean, they're still freaking touring now. And it's like, I mean,
yeah,
they're not exactly 20 anymore, but and they just yes. make
and
it.
To call it back to the singer, the difference of the singers, for me, it's not so much about the difference between Deano and Dickinson. It's the addition of Adrian Smith.
Mm. Okay. And that's yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Like Adrian came in. He didn't play on the first record. He played on Killers, but he was very much like still the new guy.
And then, finding his way.
Yes.
Sure.
And then Dickinson comes in and Adrian's got a little more stamp on what gets on the songwriting in mm-hmm. Number of the Beast, and the production is different. The sound quality is different. Like it's just,
everything
it's
is just, yeah,
a little crisper, a little mm-hmm. less punk, a little more prog, if that makes sense.
Oh no, that no, for me no, is no, the no.
We don't prog. Use, we don't talk about prog.
Oh
on this
no,
show.
We talk about prog.
We talk about prog on this show.
We are big fans of prog.
Yeah. Like,
bam, once again.
Dawn of the Dead, that record is tons of time changes. But it's, I mean, that's Adrian's influence. Like, that's, mm-hmm. All right, talking about song clips, I also asked you to pull out Reach Out, which was the B-side on the Wasted Years single. Maiden was really good about putting B-sides on their singles that were covers.
All right, hold on.
This one's not. It's over your head. You don't seem to understand what a word has said. You can't live your life.
That's like a different band to me.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's sure. Adrian saying. Yeah. Right. And he's just, but you can hear Wasted Years in that. You can hear Stranger in a Strange Land in that.
Oh, yeah.
You can hear Heaven Can Wait in that. And I think that Adrian's influence on the band is oftentimes,
I know Wasted Years is one of Julie's top ones.
Yeah.
So, same.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right.
No, that is cool.
All right. Well, we've neglected Drew a little bit, which we enjoy, but
I've been sitting on my hands pretty well.
Okay. Right, so, well, now it's your time to shine.
Drew actually does like Iron Maiden. And so here's one of the songs he picked. That is 2 minutes to midnight.
The hand that threatens doom.
Okay. We're not doing all that.
And I was a communication major in college, and so we did a public speaking class, and one of my buddies who was pre-med also took that class because it was our senior year, and he was like, whatever, I'm taking this with you. And there was an episode or a lab where we had to read a poem, and he read that song lyric.
How'd he
entire
do?
Song.
Yeah.
And from memory, it was great. He did a great job. But the jellied brains of those who remained to put the finger right on you in that line, there was this, I mean, very timid, shy little Asian lady who was sitting in the girl. I mean, those were children.
Just fell right out of her chair.
And he was looking everywhere else in the room. And then when he said, put the finger right on you, and he put his finger right in her face, and she screamed. It was so funny.
Now that,
oh boy,
that was great. Is awesome. Awesome. Well, Drew, so this was also from 1984 Power Slave. What did you like about, what pulled you into that song?
I came to Iron Maiden much later in life than probably the rest of you.
Well, you came to the world much later
than the rest of us. This is true. This is true. I'm the baby with my gray hair. Believe it or not, I actually didn't really start listening to Iron Maiden until I met Carl. And I heard them in the Black Abbey tap room. And I've been more of a progressive metal fan than, you know, traditional British metal, if you can call anything about Iron Maiden traditional. And what I really have loved about Maiden as I have gotten into them in the last 10 years or so is the stories that they tell, the commentary on society, on events. You know, it's poetry with power guitar, and I absolutely love it.
Cool. Yeah. And a singer that can blow.
There you go. All right, let's blow through this last beer.
Okay. So very quickly, we are going to talk about the Fear of the Dark beer. First brewed in 2020. It's a 4.5% English stout. Sometimes feel a little strange, a little anxious when it's dark. And one of my favorite songs live. Fear of the Dark. Like, favorite songs live. Okay, so as a stout, what do you guys think of this?
Very English.
Yeah, it's a meh for me. Okay. Like, I like stouts to be either Irish, like Guinness, where it's got this sort of back end almost
dry.
Yeah, it's so dry, it's almost tart. Or I like them to be big and roasty and
chocolate.
Thick.
This one kind of falls off the mark. Yeah. Well, we are going to rate, sadly, the Fear of the Dark a 2.
But do better, Iron Maiden.
But the song is phenomenal.
It's a 5.
It's great.
It is. Well, that is going to wrap it up for today. This was such a great episode. And a special thanks to our guest, Carl.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
From the Black Abbey Brewing Company. Tell us how we can find you on social media.
Instagram is probably the best way. You could get me at Black Abbey Brewing. You could get me at Black Abbey Carl. Is mine. And then I also do Vinyl DJ, and my Vinyl DJ Instagram handle is DJ Dad's Been Drinking.
Nice.
Nice. Good old boy Drew, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good old boy Dave.
Hey, I'll play my favorite Iron Maiden song.
I left alone. My mind was blank. I needed time to think to get the memory.
This is
from
my new favorite.
Of course.
Mambo Kurt.
Yeah. All right. This is Good Old Gal Juliana. Keep on chuggling and catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap.
Just tap it in.
The subscribe button.
Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
The easiest way to listen to our show is to ask Siri, Alexa, Google, Uncle Larry, or whoever it is that talks to you on your phone. Play podcast, Sip Suds and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our tasting notes flow out on Twitter and Instagram with our handle @sipsudsandsmokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with the thousands,
millions, and millions
of other fans on those social media platforms. Do us a favor. Take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. Come back, join us for another episode, and keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip Suds and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the Good Old Boys, will see you all next time.